How many of you watched the Super Bowl yesterday? I tell you, it was something else. Every year, it's kind of a weird emotion comes over me the morning after the Super Bowl. My mind goes back to the year 2000, when I had the most unbelievable experience the morning after the Super Bowl. In order to know what happened the morning after, you need to kind of know what happened the morning, the build-up the week before. My friend Jay was a big Tennessee Titans fan, and they made the Super Bowl against St. Louis Rams. Maybe some of you are old enough to remember that. And he said, Pete, I'm a big Steelers fan. He knows that. He says, Pete, I'm a big Titans fan. You know this. He says, I don't want to be like one of those Bears fans that had a chance and they didn't, and then 1985 is gone, and then, you know, whatever. So that was his words. All right. They were true, but anyway. He said, this is my one chance. He said, I want to go down. I just want to embrace some of the Super Bowl experience. He said, we'll come back in plenty of time. We'll end up hanging out with our wives on Friday night. It's going to be great. He said, just please consider going down with me. I just want to drive down. Just want to soak up the experience of the week. I said, well, back then Encounter was on Wednesday nights. I said, I got to stay till at least Encounter's over. He said, fine. He says, let's drive right after Encounter, 10 o'clock. We're going to drive through the night. So sure enough, we do, and we're driving down. And before we actually go, this was like the premier year that the ESPN News was like first coming out about that time. He said, I've been watching this new show, this new station, ESPN News, and they have there's this group down there, this tequila company, Jose Cuervo. They're giving away Super Bowl tickets. I think we should find them. And I'm like, yeah, right, okay. Whatever gets you excited, Jay. So we hop in the car and we're driving down, and I end up getting a late shift. I mean, there's so many parts of the story that I get kind of bad end of the deal. But anyway, I'm driving, I'm nodding, my head's nodding, you know. And I just hit the Georgia border. It's like 4 a.m. and Jay's sleeping. And so I'm Jay. I'm in the passenger seat. You're driving. You're me. And we're just driving along. And he's just reclined. And I'm not kidding. It was the weirdest thing. Like, as soon as I see Welcome to Georgia State Line, he rises out of a dead sleep. He rises up, big eyes, and looks at me. And he says, we're going to the Super Bowl. And he goes back to sleep. I was like, weird. That was weird. Well, the next day, it's a long story. I'm going to try to keep it as short as I can. It's a good one. The next day, I don't know how many of you guys are like real NFL fans where you know the Cleveland, you have to be a real fan to know what the Cleveland Browns fans are like, but they have like in the end zone, they have what they call the dog pound. And these guys have like dog faces on and stuff. And there's this huge 400-pound guy that's got like this jersey on the back that says Big Dog. And we see Big Dog. We're like, dude, let's go say hi to Big Dog. So we go over to Big Dog, and it says on the front of his jersey, it says Jose Cuervo. We're like, putting two and two together. This is the same group that's giving away Super Bowl tickets. So he sees Jay, my buddy Jay. He's just awesome. He sees this guy in a suit standing next to Big Dog, and he walks right up to this guy in the suit, and he says, you guys are giving away Super Bowl tickets. And he goes, yeah, we are. And he says, I saw you on TV last night at 9 o'clock, and my buddy and I just drove straight through the night to find you. And he said, you guys get two Super Bowl tickets. Free! But we had to do something kind of crazy. He says, you got to do something crazy to get them, okay? So my hair was a little longer back then, and they did a little reverse mohawk on me, and there was this other person from the dog pound, this lady. She had like a bone in her head, on her hair, and she had these fishnet stockings. And I had to put the fishnet stockings on, and I had to run around the CNN Center with a reverse mohawk, and I just had to say, I want Super Bowl tickets. Easy. Free Super Bowl tickets. This is awesome. Jay, he's thinking, he's trying to figure out something. He doesn't know what, and finally it just comes to him. I'll eat a $100 bill. Jay, you don't have a $100 bill, right? Pete, don't you have a... Yeah, I've got a $100 bill. So So I hand over this $100 bill. He can't get it down. He is stressing. Like, I can't get this thing down. He's getting water, whatever he couldn't. I mean, it won't, your saliva, try it. Don't try it. It won't break it down. And so he has to rip it into three parts, ends up getting it down. In the meantime, we don't have a place to stay. And some of the other super fans that were around, that were at attractional features, were around at the same time. And one of these guys, I don't know if you know much about Green Bay, but Green Bay is considered, their nickname is Title Town. And so there's this guy that dresses in Green Bay stuff, and he dresses like a clown. He's the Title Town Clown, okay? And so Title Town Clown says, hey, six-pack of beer, and we're going to get you into my room. And we're like, that's cheap. So we stay. One of us stays with him, and I end up staying with some other fan. I don't even know. Whatever. It's not important. And a couple days go by, and Jay comes up to me. And, oh, by the way, we are celebrities. We are in Atlanta, and Jay's talking to his buddy on the phone, and this guy's like, Jay, I see you on the TV right now. This is unbelievable. So, like, we were, like, big news. I didn't make national news, but I did make local news, and I would come down from my hotel room every day. Yep, there's me on the TV. I mean, it was just weird, like, my 15 minutes of fame around this huge Super Bowl experience. Jay, a couple days later, he comes to me, and he says, Pete, my wife's really mad that I ate $100. Yeah, I guess so. I could see that. He said, please tell me, in the Philippines, like, people would follow me around probably if they knew I was going to poop out $100. And I was like, Jay, what did you do? I go into his room, and in the sink is floating three pieces of $100 bill. So what do you do with that? You tape them together and you cash it in at Shoney's restaurant. That's what you do with that. So if your mom told you that you don't know where that money's been, she's right. So we end up having that experience, and then we end up going to the Super Bowl, and we're riding with Big Dog and all these super fans, and we've got HBO's doing a special about super fans, and I've never seen that show come out, but I was interviewed. I tell you, I was interviewed for this show, and we get and our car breaks down, and we got to jack it up, change a tire, and we get there early, and we go right down to the edge of the end zone, and as every person comes out for the Tennessee Titans, Jay calls them out by name. Hey, Javon Curse, have a good game. The guy turns around and looks right at Jay. You have a good game today. like Jay talked to every single person at the Super Bowl that was on his team, on the Titans. And we got to smell the smells of the Super Bowl. We got to experience the Super Bowl. It was unbelievable. We were on cloud nine. Jay had to work early the next morning in Illinois. And so right after the Super Bowl, we're driving through the night again. Here I am driving Jay back. And we hit town about 6 o'clock. And I'm thinking, man, we are going to be so popular. I mean, the radio stations are just going to love our story. It's going to be unbelievable. So I'm listening to these radio stations that are chiming, and they're saying, all right, I want everyone to call in about your Super Bowl experience that you had yesterday. I want you to chime in on one of three topics: the pregame and postgame interviews, the replays, was it a knee down or not? I don't know if you know, there was a close ending about yard track, and the third was what do you think? What was the chime in this morning? Commercials, right? Tell us what you thought of the commercials. I realized in that moment, I was so into the Super Bowl that I really had nothing to contribute to everyone else's experience of the Super Bowl. Isn't that kind of weird? I really feel like we're going to enter into a 3 or 4 week series on relationships. And I got to tell you guys something. I've got a relationship with my wife that I want you all to have. I want you to have the same thing. It's great. It's really, really good. And I'm not just saying that. We just went down to Georgia Tech and got to share this with people, and it was really powerful and an awesome weekend. And I kind of feel like the more I talk to people about relationships, it's like I'm talking to people at that radio show the morning after. Like, yeah, do you like the Super Bowl? I want to talk about the Super Bowl. And every once in a while, like, yeah, the commercials. And I'm like, no. No. Yeah, the pregame and the, no. No, I want to tell you about the real deal. And that's kind of how I am with my, like I go to people, like, hey, I want to talk about a relationship. Yeah, Valentine's Day. No. No. I'm not it. No, yeah, it's like chocolates and movies and no. And I just kind of feel like I'm missing people a lot of times. And what I want to help you do, in the next few weeks, I want to bring you into the real deal. I want to bring you into what I think is the real stuff that's going to make your futures with your relationships amazing. And some of you are saying, oh, crap, I just walked into the first week of a relationship series. And I'm like, yes, you did. And I know this, let me explain something to you guys. I've been in your seat. There is nothing I hated more than relationships talks, because you're pretty much screwed on whatever the guy talks about, because you're one of three camps, okay? The first camp, and I get this, the first camp is, this guy's just going to tell me how I'm dating the wrong person. He's going to tell me this person isn't godly enough, this person isn't the right depth for him, this person isn't the right gender, this person isn't the right whatever. You're just going to tell me something about my person that I'm dating that's wrong. There's a second group of you that are afraid that, yeah, I'm dating the right person, but I'm not handling it the best. He's just going to tell me how I'm doing it all wrong. And there's a third group of you here that say, you know, I haven't had a date since sixth grade, and you're going to keep reminding me of that every 5 minutes. And trust me, I know all of that really is painful in some ways. I want to be sensitive to that. But I think we would all agree that there is nothing probably more pertinent and necessary to talk about than this topic. So here's what I want us to do. I want us to prepare ourselves for what is really real, what's really deep, what's really a God message. And in order to do that, I just want you, whatever your mind block is, if it's like, oh, I just don't want him to talk about this or that, or just that you would just kind of crumple that thing up and that you would set it outside the door mentally. Like for 30 seconds, just take it, whatever it is that it might be blocking you from hearing what God might want to say to you tonight. Not Pete, but God might want to say to you. And I want you to put it at the door. I guarantee you it'll be there waiting for you when you leave. But let's let this be a sacred 40 minutes to let God speak. Can we do that? Let's take 30 seconds and let's just mentally do that. James 1 says, consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds. For you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. And perseverance must finish its work. Not start its work. Perseverance must finish its work so that you will be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Most of us are going through life looking for love to complete us, to mature us. We're not looking for trials to mature us and complete us. We're looking for a person to mature us and complete us. It's just natural. And I've got to tell you some bad news before we start, okay? It'll get good later, but it's going to be bad news to start because you have to know what you're up against. You guys are 19, 20, 21 years old, and you guys know you guys know that there's not really good stats out there for marriage. But I got to tell you, it might even be worse than you think. Because I think we would all agree that just staying together isn't really the goal. And there's a lot of parents that are just staying together. They're just living around each other. They're just in the same house. She lives upstairs. He's in the basement. And that's not what we probably would call success. What we're going to call success for this series is what a parent would say to a child to say, I've got a marriage I want my kid to have. That's success. And the reality is this, that one out of five marriages have that statistic. A lot of what you're going to hear is something that you guys heard last year at the Winter Retreat from Randy Garris. And you say, well, I've already heard this. I need to hear it at least every 6 months. So I think I can probably be safe to say that a lot of what I'm going to say is going to be stolen from Randy's stuff. I'm going to just give him credit for everything I say. But at the same time, it's something that needs to be heard. He came up with these stats last year, and he gave them to us, and he said one out of five marriages, one out of five actually says, I've got a marriage I want my kid to have. That's pretty scary, because you just go down the line, it says one, two, three, four, no, five. Ooh, got lucky. Well, you know, it's like there's five loves up here. And I just... We look at that and we're like, I just don't know which one to pick. They all look the same, don't they? I mean, they look exactly the same. One of them is different. And from the outside, you and I can't tell. It all looks the same. It all looks like love. Part of the reason is because we have the same word that we can't define it very well. This might help. I was in college, and I was on a date with Keith. Keith Lamb found these twins. And so I was like, all right, sweet. So Keith's up front with Brenda. I'm in the back seat with Bonnie. And we're driving along, and we're smoochy facing a little bit. All right, we're kissing and hugging and whatever we're doing. And in the middle of this endeavor, I stop and I look down on her, and she's looking up at me, and it's just one of those moments where you just don't know what to do next, right? I'm like super awkward and inexperienced at this point. I'm just like, whatever. And so I say something to her that's it's like date one or two. It's like the absolute worst thing a guy can say. Who knows what I said? I just looked down at her, and I just in the awkwardness, I just said what I thought was right. I love you. What? Brenda, stop the car. She's like, he said he loves me. And Brenda's like, what? You can't say that. And I was like, they were like, what are you saying? I was like, I've said what I thought I was supposed to say. Like, that's not what you're supposed to say. But I love Brenda too. What? And I love Keith. What? And I love pizza. And I love the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I love peanut butter sandwiches, and I love long walks. Can you see that we have a word love that just means all kinds of things. And we end up counseling each other with the same word. And we just get into trouble, we get into circles, and we just... It's going to happen. Maybe it's even happened with a couple of you, you know? It's like you have a late night talk and you realize you love each other. You go home over Thanksgiving and you show everybody the ring and everyone screams, and this is so awesome. And dad looks to mom and says, you better have a talk with her. Before the night's over, she pulls you aside into the back bedroom and she says, I just got to ask you one question. Do you love him? Oh, Mom, I love him. I've never felt anything like this. I really love him. And there's a similar conversation happening with the dad and the son. And you know what love is now, right, son? Oh, Dad, I know love, love. And we just keep dancing around, and everyone's meaning different things, and eventually they end up getting divorced 3 years down the road, and the neighbor across the street says, yeah, I never thought that'd work out. I didn't think they really loved each other. Man, I want to help the stats go up big time tonight, and I want to help us really dive into these bags and see what's behind this, because one of these, has what it takes for you to have success, to be one of the five. You guys know, I mean, you know these stories. You know junior high love, right? Gag. The Greeks have many words for love. I think there's about five, but we're going to look at three. And I think it's not going to be a surprise to many of you who've been in a church for a while. You know these three, okay? But eros love, where we get our word erotic, it's not just a sexual love, okay? It's this emotion felt deep. It runs deep. It's very much the core of who you are. Okay, it's one of those loves that you can't really explain. It just kind of happens to you. It's a reactive love. It's a reaction. I just can't help myself. I just, oh my gosh. And so there is something that's just hardwired into girls. Okay, hardwired into girls. You want more than anything to belong. You really want to identify yourself with somebody. And there's some guy that was on the football team. Man, that looks cool. I'd like to identify myself with him. There's some guy that's like just so godly. Oh, I want to attach myself to that. A lot of this, it's not bad. Okay? It's reactive. You as a female have a great hardwired desire to belong. So you end up saying things. You end up saying things like, he just makes me melt. When he's in my presence, I just get weak in the knees. I just don't know. I just I can't help it. There's something that just overwhelms me. Right? I was always stunned that, you know, like the Justin Bieber guy gets, and everyone's like, ah! I was like, what's going on? What's happening there? I don't get it. Guys, you're hardwired too. You are hardwired visually. Girls, you know it. You know it. I mean, it's what we sell. It's what every TV ad is. It's even the non-racy one yesterday. It's everywhere. And you know that is a tough spot for you to be in. I'm going to tell you right now, it's hard to be a girl. It's tough to be a girl. I get that. And I'm sorry for you because you're in a hard, hard spot. Guys, you're in a hard spot in a way too because you can take an easy way out if you want to be a coward. And the easy way out is to just shop around online for what you want. It's easy. And the girls don't have a chance. Girls don't have a chance to match up to what selection you can get at the click of a mouse. It's already built into girls to be insecure with their looks because beauty is always fleeting and beauty is always changing. Do you guys remember in the book of Song of Solomon? There's like this love story happening and he's like falling all over her and she's like, oh, I've just been in the sun too long. I'm so ugly. I mean, this is thousands of years going on, guys. This has been happening with girls forever. And you go to the Eastern countries right now, that's what they say. Oh, I don't want to be dark. They buy a whitening cream. We're over here and we're tanning booths, right? We got to be darker. You know, back in the 50s, I guess, there was this sex symbol, Marilyn Monroe, full figured, big boobs. Oh yeah, she's sexy. Then it moves a little bit later, and the 70s hit. Maybe some of you guys don't even know this name, but Farrah Fawcett. Have you guys ever heard of that name? What was sexy about her? Hair. She had the big hair. And then it carried over into the 80s, and that's when I met Paulette, and she like had like an antenna thing going up on her bangs. And it was just like, dude, she's so hot, man. She's so hot. Look at that. She's just got that big old thing hanging up on her forehead. And so that was sexy. And then you move from there, and you got J-Lo wiggling her back end, and you're like, oh, that's hot. And then you go a little bit, few years later, and now we're kind of in this, I don't know, this... What's the blue jean? Skinny people. What? Calvin Klein. Calvin Klein's like you're not sexy if you're like over 75 pounds, right? And girls, you just don't have a chance. It's just moving. It's always moving along. And I'm sorry, but that's how guys are hardwired. Visually, you're hardwired for the sense of belong. And the guys are like, I just can't help myself. I'm just like, she's just, wow. Turned on. And you got this thing going on. Eros love. And they can't help it. And we call it love. And it is love. But if you base your relationship on an Eros love, Randy says it's a 1 to 3 year love. 1 to 3 years. Now, they might stay married till they're 50 years, but that relationship will die at year 1 to 3. And so, most, roughly speaking, I know it gets kind of hard to decipher, but we got to know that these first two are an I love you, Eros, love you if kind of love. And you don't have a whole lot of a chance to succeed with these. And so right here, we've got 40% of our culture right now is like 1 to 3 year marriage. There's something in these next two bags that just seems a little bit better. And it's the word because. Because sounds a lot better. Because I just said because again. It sounds a lot better. Because it's not reactive love. It's not I can't help myself kind of love. It's a thought out kind of love. It's phileo love. It's like, hey, I know what I want and I'm going to get it. It's what Match.com builds itself off. It's not all bad. So please don't label this as bad, 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 bad. It's because God made these two, okay? But when we base our life and our marriage and our future on these, it doesn't last. There's a place for these. And I would hope that you would be able to be a bit selective when you're going to get married. That you are looking for somebody that's a believer, that you are looking for somebody that is stable, that you're looking for somebody that's got some happiness or has some something. And so you go on Match.com and you're like, I like this and I like this and I like that. I don't like that and I want funny and I don't. And you can just, and I need a picture. Okay, let's see, let's have a date. That's loving because. And it's better. And Randy says that this is a 4 to 7 year marriage. This is a 4 to 7 year relationship. Because what ends up happening with this marriage is that these people will come together And everything will line up because I'm picking based on what I need. And I'm looking for happy, and I'm looking for fun, and I'm looking for steady. And this person might end up struggling with depression, might end up being in a car accident, might end up, I mean, there's so many things that might happen afterwards. And you know what? Even if you're going off personality, I want you to know your personality is changing every 6 months. And by the time you're my age, you're going to be a different person. I am a different person now than I was when I was your age. And if my wife married and wanted to stay married to a 19, 20, 21-year-old that she met, she'd be really disappointed. And that's what ends up happening a lot of times. People come into offices all the time, and they're just like, he's just not the same guy I married. He's just changed. And you can't argue it. You can't argue that. No, he's not. And neither are you, lady. So what's in this last bag? Consider it pure joy when you face trials of many kinds. Because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. And perseverance when it what? Just, I kind of forgot, actually. What is it? And perseverance when it's finished, its work. Yeah, there we go. That started. And perseverance when it finishes its work, you'll be mature and you'll be complete, not lacking anything. Perseverance needs to finish its work. Some of you are in a perseverance mode. I got to praise my kids right here, right now. It's really easy in high school. It's really easy in junior high. It's really easy to walk down the halls. I know. I was in high school, junior high. And you walk down the halls and you're like, I can't help myself. I feel something. And they have, for the most part, really refrained from jumping into that. It's futile. It's finite. It's short-lived. It's going to be painful. You enter into that, it's going to be painful. It is the trial. It is the perseverance over time that's going to grow you into the person that you need to be. Mature and complete. Because you see what ends up happening with a person that is eros, that's just like, oh, I can't help myself. They end up leaning. And this person over here is like, and you make me feel so, oh, and they end up colliding, and it's like, oh my goodness, does this feel really, really good? Crash burn. And I'll tell you what, this, you guys know, a lot of you have experienced it yourself. The eros love that you really, and it's a heavy lean. It's a heavy lean because you don't have anything else in your bag except an if. It's all you've got with you. Because when you were born, you were a leaner. And you got a little older, and your mom and dad, I'm telling you, your mom and dad, no matter how bad they might be, you might think they are, their hope for you is that you'd be an upright person. And you've been leaning your whole life. And you've got to about the age 12, 13, and then every song you heard on the radio and every Disney movie you ever watched and every other movie you ever watched and every TV show you ever saw, it all said you need to shift your lean from mom and dad and you need to find some other significant other, and you followed that. And you just were like one electron shy in your outer shell, and you were just like, I need. And then there was this thing happens, and you end up colliding. And you end up leaning on this person, and it feels really good. And every sixth grade, seventh grade relationship lasts about 6 months, and it breaks. And it's no different when you're 22. It's no different when you're 32. If you've got nothing else in your bag except an if, you're going to lean. And nobody can hold you up. Because you're a taker. And I want you to realize something tonight. A lot of you got to realize something. You got to realize you're takers. I don't say that to be mean. I say that because you're young. And I say that because you need to develop some perseverance to get on your own two feet. And the best thing that's ever happens to people that makes you go on your own two feet is a breakup. That breakup where you're like, I just don't know if I can do it. And you break and you just feel like you're going to fall flat on your face. And it is scary. That's when you start to grow. That's when you develop perseverance. That's when you become mature and complete. That's when you become an upright person. The same thing happens with because. Because it's a more sophisticated way to lean. That's all that is. Just thinking this through a little bit. These are the needs I've got. Click, click, click. Let's see if it's up to date. I mean, it's more sophisticated, but it's still a lean. And for those few people that dare to allow your singleness to hurt and sting a little bit, to grow you up and to become a person that's going to depend on God, you're going to find something different in your bag. You're going to find a whole bunch of stuff in your bag. You're going to find your own morality. You guys ever, let's see if that works. Yeah, that sticks. You guys ever meet that guy that can't quite stop smoking pot unless he's dating somebody? That's borrowing her morality to help him stand up. He's a leaner. The person that's got his own morality, it doesn't matter who else is drinking a beer around him. Like yesterday, we were at the Super Bowl party, and I was like, hey, we had some friends over. I said, hey, you want a beer? Nope, don't drink. Great, well, the minister's drinking. You're not going to drink a beer? Nope. He's got his own morality. I love this guy. He's like knew who he was. He's awesome. Yeah. Do you need somebody? Do you need somebody to be a certain moral person, or can you do it on your own? Let's see what else is in this bag. Oh, they're all sticking together. Oh, there's a good one. I like this one. Money. You have your own money? Are you the kind of guy that just can never pay for retreat? He's always got to have everybody. He's just like borrowing all the time, or vice versa. Like you're looking for somebody that's going to fill you up that way because I'm going to marry him for money. I'll tell you what, if you've got your job, your own money, you have some freedom, you have some abilities there. I'm not going to get mad at you if you pay for retreat. Don't worry about it. See this work. Your own purpose. Oh, I get kind of annoyed. So does my wife. Kind of annoyed because I went to a Bible college. It just seemed like there were so many girls that were there for their MRS degree. It's like, I am here to just find a guy that's a Christian and I'm going to get married. That's my purpose. Man, I just like the idea a lot more of like, running after something and seeing who's running with me. And going overseas and going to Hungary and then going to China. And as I'm going on a 9-day one-way trip that's just like the adventure of a lifetime and I'm on this train, I look across and who's sitting across from me? It's my future wife. I want you to have that. Like, she had a sense of purpose. I had a sense of purpose. We're going for it. And it was kind of funny. Like, she mentioned at our guys' retreat. She says, I looked over at Pete, and she says, I want to meet a guy just like him. Like, it wasn't even in a realm of thought that it was me, which I didn't always like. But it just kind of shows you that she was going after something that wasn't about me. She was just after the Lord. And I happened to be there, and we ended up just, I hope you get that. What else is in this bag? Oh, it's a big one. It's a big one. Can I get it? Oh, your own happiness. Break in there. Go ahead, just like that. shove that in there. I'm going to get the other one while I can. Oh, where is it? There it is. Your own happiness and your own contentment. Are you just kind of a sad, mopey person if you're not dating somebody? Are you the discontent person? Like, how many girlfriends have you had? How many boyfriends are we going from to the next? You need something to keep you propped up. This person is not empty. These people lean. This person stands on their own two feet. This person, through trials, has developed perseverance to stand up, to be an upright person, to be a person that contains their own contentment, their own happiness, their own morality, their own money. This person can go through life and they don't need anybody. And that might be you. And Paul says that's best. If you can do that, man, you're going to be really used by God. He says if you need to get married, go ahead and do that. But make sure that you got some contentment and some personality and some things on your own two feet that you can actually possess. Because you know what? That husband, that wife might die. They might leave. They might not be there forever. And you need to be a person that can stand on your own two feet. And when you are that kind of a person, you are going to be a giver. And God's into giving. He's not into taking. And our culture has just taken 13-year-olds and said, do this, and they never, ever, ever learn how to stand up on their own two feet because they don't go through trials to grow up and to gain morality and to gain maturity. What they do is they gain it and borrow it from each other, and it doesn't last. We've got to be upright people. And here's the cool thing. A lot of people are like, well, if I'm upright, then I don't really need to date. Exactly. But you are, though, ironically, the only ones really capable of having a successful relationship. It's the upright people that have the best fun and have the best to give and they have the most to offer, and they become the people that are going to live and it's going to get better and better and better and better as time goes on. And I really want to get to that next week. Next week, we're going to talk about what you do with a full bag. This is like the prerequisite for good love. And unfortunately, 80% of us aren't fulfilling the prerequisite. So for most of us, the first step is the biggest step, and that is to break away from somebody that you're borrowing from so that you can feel like you're going to fall flat on your face, so that you can stand on your own two feet, so that you can be a giver. In 6 months to a year from now, you can re-enter a relationship and you've got a snowball's chance. That's what I want for you. And I'm just going to speak the truth. I'm going to speak harshly. I'm going to speak directly because it's the truth. A lot of us need to really go through trials and tribulations. We need to persevere. We need to reach deep into that bag and say, you know what? I am not content, and I'm going to gut this out with the Lord for a period of time so that I can be an upright person. I'm going to find contentment on my own with the Lord. And when we have that, then we get to jump into next week. And next week, it's good. Good stuff. Okay? God, you're good. And I appreciate what you are doing in this ministry. I appreciate the truth that you have been able to relay to us through some wise people in our life. God, I love marriage. And I want what's best for everybody in this room. And I want us to take seriously the next couple weeks, because this is a serious deal. This is the rest of our life. I think sometimes we kind of we kind of underestimate just how big a deal this is. So I ask God that you would give us ears to hear in the weeks to come, and that you'd give us, the courage to act upon our conviction this week. In Jesus' name, I pray. Amen.